It's The Right Perspective with the founding fathers of Great Talk Radio, John from Staten Island and Frank from Queens.
Of the dark side has fallen.
Frank and John strike back.
You're fired.
But I'm a crime fighter.
You're fired.
We're crime fighters. Come on.
You're fired.
As you know, I gotta watch my back now more than ever before.
You're fired.
Later for that. Phenomenal.
You're fired.
This is a great day of celebration.
Victory.
If we can't be here on WABC,
stop whining.
Maybe a Murphy Burke or someone out there can buy another radio station and keep the voice of New York going. No, I don't want to overturn what is done here. The bosses have made their decision.
You're fired.
You people can try. But who knows? Maybe out there, there's another radio station. If we can't be here, we will continue to be the voice of former New Yorkers, present New Yorkers, and all those who at one time or another wanted to be a New Yorker.
Whatever.
You're fired.
I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few. Then again, too few to mention.
And this is The Right Perspective. I'm Frank of Queens, along with my good friend and co-host, John of Staten Island.
Yes, but we're not fired.
No,
and Christmas, we'd have to fire ourselves.
And Christmas has come early to us with the announcement that that degenerate liar and media shyster Curtis Sliwa is on a one-way ticket to Palookaville, and we'll talk about that and other things later in the show. But first, this is The Right Perspective. I'm Frank of Queens, along with my good friend and co-host, John of Staten Island.
And hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving.
And we're here tonight from 10 until 11 p.m. Eastern, North, Great Salutrian Time on the Two Friends Radio Network, transmitting on 3.215 megahertz WWCR. And we broadcast from the Rod Coppola Memorial Studio and Richard D. Henderson Two Friends Network, broadcast production facilities here in the metropolitan New York area. And if you'd like to, you could reach us at 718-761-9996. 718-761-9996, whatever you'd like to speak about. Today is leftover day. Everybody is knocking off the leftover turkey.
Yep, I had some already. It always tastes better, too, because it stands around, you know, and it gets better as the week goes on.
Flavors meld.
Yeah.
And speaking about turkeys, this turkey in the White House, this foreign occupier, how many more embarrassments can this idiot stand? Two people gate crash the White House, his state dinner, which, by the way, cost twice as much as the left-wing hated George W. Bush's, twice as much. He spent twice as much as Bush did in his first year in office on his budget. I mean, they always said Bush is spending like a drunken sailor. Well, if Bush spent like a drunken sailor, what does that make this foreign occupier look like? Throwing money around. Well, why should he care? It's not his money.
At least the sailors get something for their money.
He's throwing our money around. That's the whole point. It's our money. And he doesn't care. He'll suck this country dry and turn it into a third world country, another third world outhouse. And that's his plan. America has to be punished for being too prosperous, for being a leader in the world. So the American people, in his mind, are evil, and these evil people have to learn a lesson, and he's the one, along with his Chicago thugocracy, he believes are the one that are going to do it. But, you know, this White House gate crashing by these two, it really shows you we live in a society where image is everything. If you project a certain image, you can get away with anything. And that's a confidence scheme. A confidence con artist comes from confidence. They gain your confidence. They project an image. And since we're a society based upon image, not substance, because we could see what's in the White House, they projected an image. Oh, well, I guess these people look like they belong here. What if Joe Schmuck and his wife came in off the street and said, yeah, I want to go to the state dinner? You think they could even get that close to the first checkpoint? And by the way, it should have been an open house because that's our money that's paying for it. We paid for that dinner. And so it's not a matter of who he invites. It's naturally you should be able to walk in and sit down, pull up a chair, and get a plate. It's your money that's paying for it. Your money. But that doesn't register with this elitist, this foreign occupier. She's blonde and good-looking. He looks prosperous and an executive type. So naturally they're going to be allowed in. So look at how dumb and stupid, once again, his administration looks. An administration that is bumbling, fumbling, and totally incompetent. This moron wants to give us the Theft of America bill, a planned genocide bill. And so we're going to leave it up to them. They can't even check who's supposed to be in the White House. How do you think they're going to check 300 million people that are going to be applying or getting their third-rate so-called health care? Fraud, theft, it's going to be incredible if this passes. It's going to be nothing more like a vacuum cleaner sucking out the money of your from your pockets. And every con artist imaginable is going to get in on the action. It's going to be a cornucopia for them. The dollar is becoming worthless. Worthless. And why? Because he just prints more. Remember you were a kid, you'd see those documentaries about Weimar Germany, and people would have shopping carts loaded with Deutschmarks. You say, how did that happen? Well, let me tell you something, friend. It's happening here. There's more and more worthless script is printed for his grandiosity, his dreams, his plan, his delusion. He is a delusional president, and the people that surround him are delusional because they think that if their plans are implemented, that they're going to solve all our problems. They're going to bring utopia. Or, on the other point, perhaps they don't. Perhaps the real hidden agenda is just the destruction of America's wealth. I said it way back at the beginning of this foreign occupation. Destroy the economy, and he can rebuild the society in any way he wants. And now he sits there, you know, like Moses. He imagines himself to be this prophet. He fancies himself this prophet who's above us. He's above it all. He's far and away above it all. And he has to think. He has to think about it. He has to muse about it. What am I going to do? And we have to all stand there in front of Mount Sinai waiting for him to come down the slopes to tell us how we're going to live by the foreign occupier's law. He doesn't care. Americans are dying in Afghanistan. Mohammedanite fanatics are recharged and regenerized. That they want, that they're getting stronger. He just sits there, and He thinks about it. He's been given all of these recommendations by these generals, but he knows more. Of course, when Bush sent troops to Iraq, and it's not Iraq, it's Iraq, when he sent troops to Iraq, they said, oh, what does he know about war? He's never been in combat. Well, what does this son of a bitch know? What does he know? He was never outside of Chicago. But he's going to make the decision. Think about that. He's going to make the decision based upon nothing. He's never studied military strategy or tactics. He knows nothing about that field. Yet he's going to do it. He's going to make his announcement Tuesday. I guarantee you this is going to be one of the worst melodramas ever put before the America people. He's going to do this as he comes across with his statement. Now, if he sends 30,000, it's not enough. And the strategy can't be enough, no matter what he sends, unless they level the country. The words of the great General Flavius, we left it a desert. And that's what they have to do. What is a desert? They have to even make more of it a desert. Level the place. Completely obliterate them. They want to meet Allah, let them meet Allah. Give them a helping hand. Let Allah reach his hand out for them. That's what they want. Give it to them. Because religion trumps everything. When you have a fanatic who believes his reward is in the next world, religion trumps ideology. And therefore, you cannot defeat them ideologically. How could you win their hearts and minds when their hearts and minds are fanatically Mohammedanist, when their hearts and minds are closed to anything from the outside? Therefore, you have to obliterate them. So he's not going to send enough. Now his toadies on the left are getting upset because he is going to send them. So meaning that if there was any chance, any possibility of victory, the left doesn't want it. The left wants us chased out of Afghanistan. They want a fanatical Mohammedanist government over there. Isn't it amazing? The left, which bashes Christians, which gets so upset over any hint of Christianity in American government, is perfectly fine to put in a murdering thugocracy, a homicidalocracy in Afghanistan, as long as it's Mohammedanist. The only solution is a united Christian West. That's the only solution to defeat them. Because just as they think they're martyred, look up your history. The Latin knights who went on the first crusade went to be martyred. They didn't care. And that's how they defeated them. Because they were ready to be martyred. They weren't dithering about ideology and politics and offending. They went and said, we're going to take back the Holy Land, and if we die in that, well, we'll be rewarded for it. And they gladly charged into the ranks of the Mohammedanist army. That's the difference. That's what doesn't seem to be registering among people. That is the only way that you can possibly, in any way, shape, or form, defeat them. And this is a rebuttal to the SPLC, which accused Lou Dobbs of spreading untruths about leprosy. They were so upset. Oh, why, that's not true. It's a non-existent immigrant-born leprosy epidemic. Why, that's a lie. Lou Dobbs is a racist. Is he? Well, in a letter from the New York Times from William R. Lewis, Lewis and Inuzzi, and Trudy Spencer, who's a doctor, a physical therapist, and a registered nurse with New York Hansen's Leprosy Disease Control Program at Bellevue Hospital Center. They write, in fact, leprosy is clearly here in New York, and our clinic at Bellevue Hospital treats more than 500 identified cases of leprosy. While most are Caribbean, Spanish-speaking, and Asian immigrants, in recent years, we have identified and reported endemic cases in New York City. It's important that our clinic become recognized because the perception by the lay population as well as many healthcare professionals, is that leprosy is non-existent. The patients fortunate enough to know of our services receive necessary care for their leprosy. We do not know the number of cases of leprosy undetected, but diagnosis of leprosy is frequently delayed, often for many years, which can result in severe disability. Based on the cases we see at Bellevue Leprosy Clinic, there are many additional unidentified cases of leprosy in the tri-state area and mid-Atlantic region. So the SPLC, which went out of its way to attack Lou Dobbs, out of its way to try to discredit him, which got CNN cowering because, after all, the SPLC says, you're a racist. Well, obviously you're a racist, and that means that you can't have a living. You're a pariah. You have to be gotten rid of. And yet they didn't know from the beginning what they were talking about. So there's the proof, medical proof. And, you know, when you think about it, we're going to be going to the Salutrian moment of our show in a minute. But the more you think about it, do you know how frightening that is? Can you imagine how frightening it is? And when you get people in food service who have leprosy, they're handling your food. You have people in public gatherings that have leprosy, and they're trying to tell us it's not here. Another disease brought in from the toilets overseas, the primitive toilets, brought to this once clean country, a country that was the leader in world medicine, a country that was the leader in the world in disease control. And now you have these people in here illegally spreading this disease. I hope every one of them at the SPLC gets it. I hope they all get it. Then they can turn around and say, well, it's not leprosy, but I hope they get it, because they don't give a damn if we get it. You're with these people, they're here, you're mixing with them, they're in different service industries, and we're told that we shouldn't believe healthcare professionals. We shouldn't believe Lou Dobbs, who had pointed that out. We live in an alcoholic, politically alcoholic society, a society where the truth is ignored, and people like that are enablers of the truth. Well, now, you know, Thanksgiving was yesterday, and today I want to talk about the first Thanksgiving. The first Thanksgiving that actually happened but has gone unrecorded. A World Salutrian Update. World Salutrianism is on the march. Yes, people, we celebrate the first known Thanksgiving of the pilgrims. But our elders teach us that the first Thanksgiving was celebrated by the Salutrians 20,000 years ago when they landed upon this shore, when they landed upon a pristine land, untouched and untrod by man. Our elders have passed this down for tens of thousands of years, and it became forgotten in the mist of time. But we are reawakening the spirits of our great white Caucasian Salutrian ancestors by remembering the first Thanksgiving, Salutrian Thanksgiving. And this first Salutrian Thanksgiving took place in the area that they call the Ohio Valley. But actually, when I went to Meadowcroft Rock Shelter and I saw where the three rivers meet, the spirits of the ancestors spoke to me. And the elders have taught me that it wasn't called the Ohio River. It was called the Uncle of the Two Networks. that which used the Salutrian names Ohio, Allegheny, and Monongahela, for it was here that those two rivers formed the third, the Great Uncle River. And there our great white Caucasian ancestors came from all across great northern Salutria in a massive celebration of thanksgiving that brought them to these shores. And there at that celebration, there reigned peace and plenty. There was dancing and music. There was storytelling about the great history of our great white Caucasian Salutrian ancestors. That was the actual first Thanksgiving. One people, one culture, one race. And remember, send in your nomination for Salutrian of the Year. Right now it's a three-way tie between Judge Ronald, James Chatters, and Dr. Dennis Stanford for Salutrian of the Year. Keep those nominations coming. Thank you.
And yeah, we're looking forward to that. I have a feeling Judge Ronald's going to win that one. Yeah, you know, folks, it's so depressing, but yet it's invigorating knowing what's coming next November. And I'm sure there's going to be a sweep that the Democrats, they're going to be in shock. But nothing seems to shock them. It seems like they're going to plow ahead with this idiocy, this idiotic march towards socialism, Marxism, communism, no matter what. And they don't care if they lose the majority. But let's hope they do so that we can at least start the ball to unravel whatever damage we know is coming down the road. You know, people have to remember. They can't have short memories this time. They're going to have to remember all the way till next November. Oh, yes, it's a little bit of work to keep your mind active and remember what happened to us. And they don't want this disaster to go into effect for 4 years. See how slimy they are until after Obama runs for office. And that's why we're going to have a memory that's going to last 4 years, not just up until next November. But look at, you see, these are the types of things. The following is what we're going to have to remember. Now, if you're concerned about your country and what's really going on, you have to remember little details like this. And I spoke to Frank about this during the week. We just saw one obnoxious senator, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, actually brag that she manipulated $300 million out of the U.S. Treasury to buy her vote. That wasn't even a final vote on any legislation. It was just a vote to keep the debate going. Imagine what's coming down the pike to get the real vote that's going to matter. But she bragged about it. I guess she had to brag about it to let her constituency in Louisiana know that she got this money for her state. And that's all that counts. And you see, there's too much of that going on in this country today, where you have individual senators and congressmen and politicians everywhere, in state legislatures, wherever they're doing their dirty deeds, they're only concerned about their little world and the country around them. Let it be damned. And it doesn't, you know, they don't look for the long run. What if the country collapses? What good is it? You don't think it's going to affect your little world eventually if the country collapses around you? She manipulates and brags about $300 million that she stole from the United States Treasury to buy her vote. She hooed out herself. And that's what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. And yet, seniors have to remember this especially, but all Americans should remember this. For the first time in 35 years ago, you remember the announcement that there will be no cost of living increase for seniors for Social Security, even though a law was passed in 1975 that says there will be a yearly increase for seniors in Social Security to help them, you know, the people on fixed incomes keep up. Well, there won't be one this year. He hasn't got the money for it. The regime in Washington doesn't have the money. And one of the reasons that he gave us for delaying his decision on sending more troops to Afghanistan was not only his phony reason because we all know he doesn't give a damn about the troops, that he doesn't want to put our young men and women in harm's way. He's got, that's a very serious decision. And also that it costs money to send more troops over to Afghanistan. So he hasn't got the money to defend us in the battle in Afghanistan, in the war on terror. We don't have any money for that. He's concerned about the cost for that. But he'll send $300 million to Mary Landrieu to buy one stinking little vote from a whore who sold herself out. They have all the money to play politics, but for what really counts in the defense of this country, they don't have any money for that. They've got money for their own increases in their salary, but they don't have the money to defend this country. He's concerned about the putting young men and women in harm's way. You know what? Our troops have more to fear from this regime. As we all know, three Navy SEALs are going to be put on trial because one of them punched a very vicious terrorist that was finally caught in Afghanistan a while back. Oh, they punched him. Oh, what a terrible... That'll be, probably be the worst thing that happens to him if Eric Holder has any say in it. Who knows? Maybe he'll get off. Guy probably knows this. That's why he gave him a good sock on the lip. One across the lip, as Fred Sanford used to say on Sanford and Son. I'm going to give you one across the lip. Thank God. That's the only punishment this guy will get. But this regime is more interested in prosecuting American soldiers. Even if they survive Afghanistan and Iraq, if they come home here, they may end up in jail for 30 years with the hatred that this regime has for our military. So let's not be fooled one second with the phony reasons that he gives in not wanting to send troops. Everything is politics with this little devil in the White House. And, you know, as Frank was talking about Thanksgiving, and I hope everybody had a fine meal, and I hope they were stuffed when they left the table, and that they weren't thinking about hunger in America. You notice all these hunger drives that they always have around Thanksgiving. See, this is to make you feel guilty because you may not go hungry. If one person in America doesn't have enough to eat, or if they can't sit down at a Thanksgiving meal and stuff themselves, then all America and every person who can do it is supposed to feel guilty. We're not supposed to enjoy anything if there's one homeless person out there, one person who will not have a Thanksgiving Day meal. And I really don't know anybody that doesn't. I mean, a lot of the people who are in trouble really got themselves in that predicament. Either they're drug addicts or alcoholics. But there's always services around the country that serve Thanksgiving meals. But I despise when I hate it when I go to the supermarket. You want to give a dollar for hunger and for our children? You stop at a red light now, they have these buckets, people walking around. You roll down your window, they want you to contribute change. Everywhere you go, this country is becoming one big charity ward, and I'm getting a little bit tired of it. And we've always said on this show, don't ever believe what a liberal says about America. They will always make America out to be an uncaring nation. And lo and behold, an article in the New York Post of this past Monday, the 23rd, Charles Lane writes, and this is where our favorite phrase on the right perspective, don't ever believe anything a liberal says. I told you, folks, they always lie. They always manipulate statistics. They always make things up to make America out to be an uncaring nation. He writes, and we're going to be going to a break in a couple of minutes. We'll continue this when we come back. And those of you who want to join us, the number is 1-718-761-9996. We have a few lines open here. He writes, what hunger in America? And he's right. Last week, an Agriculture Department study showed that 16.4 million U.S. households containing 49.1 million people experienced food insecurity. See, they always come up with these phrases now. Food insecurity. That's in quotes. In 2008, up from 12.2 million households with 36.2 million people in 2007. Fortunately, Congress had addressed some of the problem with a significant food stamp boost in the stimulus package adopted in February. Yeah, right. The money probably went everywhere but where it was supposed to go. And, you know, they like financing these food stamp programs because it's an industry, folks. You know, these social programs are big money. There's people who, rely on these programs for a job. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes and we'll continue this. And just want to go over a couple of the lies that the liberals always try to lay upon us and make us feel guilty. All right, folks, 1-718-761-9996. We'll be taking your calls and we'll be coming back in about a minute.
I would like to say, Frank and John, you guys are tremendous. You're doing an excellent work. I've been on shows across America, and boy, you keep things going. You're right on track. Go for it. America needs you.
There's so many slaves, you could build an army.
But I have built a city. 16 of these lions of Pharaoh will guard its gates. And it shall be the city of Seti's glory.
Are these slaves loyal to Seti's glory? What do you, Moses?
Slaves worship their God. And I serve only...
All right, we're back. I haven't heard that one in a while. You know, to continue this story about the liberal lies on hunger and everything else that the liberals always say is bad about America, says, but is hunger widespread in America? Headlines about the study, 49 million Americans report a lack of food, declared by the New York Times, implied that famine stalks the land. See, it's always a crisis with liberals, right? The stories were salted with terms such as alarming and dramatic. The data, however, don't support this dire portrayal. What else is new with the liberals with their lies? The United States Department of Agriculture report is based on a survey of 44,000 households that were asked whether and how a lack of funds affected their eating habits. The first question was whether the respondent had ever worried, in quotes, about running out of food in the last 12 months. Not actually run out of food, just worried about it. A yes answer counts as food insecurity. See how they manipulated that? Not that they did run out, but that they worried about it. So now they're in the number of food insecurity. Adults were asked if they ever lost weight due to a lack of food money. But not how much weight or what they weighed before. In theory, a 300-pound man who lost a pound could count as food insecure. See that? The least severe forms of insecurity were the most commonly reported. Worry, with 19.7% of households, topped the list, followed by running out of food before money came in to buy more. 15.3%, that's in parentheses. In neither instance did respondents actually eat less than usual. Only about a third of the 16.4 million food insecure households reported that any member experienced even a brief reduction in actual food consumption. Only 0.1% of children went without food for a whole day in 2008. This was actually down from 0.2% in 2007. Who was president then? Is it a, quote, alarming, unquote, that 99.9% of American children ate at least something every day despite worst economic downturn since the Depression? Or is it a tribute to U.S. abundance and the safety net, public and private? In fact, 2008, when George Bush was president, was the best year in 8 decades for food affordability, according to the USDA. It took 5.6% of income to feed an average family of four. Food is so readily available that on the very day that the USDA issued its report, Health policy expert Kenneth Thorpe of Emory University in Atlanta reported that if present trends continue, 43% of Americans will be obese by 2018.
Yeah.
So it's such a fart. Don't ever believe anything a liberal says, folks. They will always do this.
And food stamps. Everybody, like anything else the government starts, people get their hand in. So when they wanted to cut the program, the National Association of Grocers, or the National Grocers Association, were against it because it would hurt their business. So it's public and private working together in a mutual symbiotic economic relationship. And we can all thank this. So, you know, it's not just the government. Private business getting involved in this. Not only is that, you have tremendous fraud in that. You have tremendous waste in that. And they were pushing here in New York, oh, you should apply for food stamps.
They had these advertisements.
And when you go in a grocery store and you see these foreigners come in and they're just throwing, you don't know if they're legal immigrants. They were handing them out like playing cards to people. I told you, I saw this Mohammedan woman. She's checking out. She's using food stamps. And then she goes outside and gets in a car in the parking lot. Now, you could afford the money for gas, but you can't afford the money for milk for your kid. And in New York, you don't need a car to go shopping. There's a store on every corner, or at least within five blocks less or less of walking distance.
Yes.
So that's what happens. And, you know, this is done. Then it's accepted. You know, it's like I had a professor in college said something very true to me. When you grow up and you see things the way they are presently, you tend to think they were always like this. So people tend to think, oh, there was always food stamps. No, there wasn't. Now, there was malnutrition in this country during the Great Depression. Prior to World War One, they did that when they had the army physicals. They found cases, large cases of rickets. But there's never been starvation. There's a big difference. And I tell you, this bastard, you're going to have that in this country because food is the number one weapon that the left uses to keep its population in line. They don't have to use guns. All they got to do is cut the food supply. And you've seen it in Bolshevik country after Bolshevik country. That's what they do. They may be growing it, but what they do is they siphon it out to the people to keep the people down, to keep the people weak. When they had the great famine in Ukraine, it was plenty of wheat, plenty. But what happened? Commissars, you know, like Obama has his commissars. What they would do is they had a quota. And to show that they were exceeding the quota, they went in and forced in the collectivization for farms to put out more. And the excess that they took was kept in silos so they could go back to their masters in the Kremlin and say, look, comrade, look what a good Bolshevik I am. I've exceeded my limit, my quota. We've exceeded the quotas. So the granaries in Ukraine were bursting, and people were starving to death. The same thing in the Great Leap Forward. You don't let the government in on that, because that becomes their greatest weapon against the population. And leftist governments make continual war against their own population. And that's what we've got now. And that's why this health theft is so dangerous. Because you control people, you control their health, you control people's lives. Think of that. He wants to cull the herd. That's the idea now, to cull the herd. Wants to save Social Security? Cull the herd. Wants to save Medicare? Cull the herd. That's exactly what's going on. It's too many white people in this country, and they're in the demographic group of Social Security and Medicare. And he's got to cull the herd and legalize the illegals. The American people can't stand idly by and allow this. These bastards, these BS artists in Congress, have to learn a lesson. They work for us. We don't work for them. They govern us. with the consent of us, the governed. They don't rule us. But it's come to a point in this country where that's what's going on. A political class elite with clearly defined lines. And what's good for you is not good for them. They're special. They have to be treated special. And what applies to you cannot apply to them because they're special. And that has to stop, and they have to know it. And whether it's the toadies in the Ministry of Lies, people have to get a sharp wake-up call. That's your liberty at stake. That's your life at stake. And if your life and liberty are at stake, then you must act to save your life and your liberty. And if they don't like it, well, that's too damn bad. The hell it ain't. And we saw this with the arrogance at town hall meetings. We saw it with the arrogance of fat slob queer Bonnie Frank. Who the hell is he to talk that way to anybody? Yeah. He's there because of the public. And at the same time they're telling you that there's food insecurity, at the same time they turn around and tell you there's an obesity epidemic. There was a black host that John and I used to call on Long Island until we got banned. It was my fault because they banned me and then they banned John. But, you know, John had said to him, I don't see any hunger in this country. I don't see any starving people. And he goes, well, you know, John, I've seen plenty of poor people that are fat, John. Just because they're fat doesn't mean they're starving. Now, if you can make sense of that remark, then there's a bridge in Brooklyn that you could buy. But that's how they will go. Because when you push them to the wall, when they are pushed to the wall, and when they are hit with logic, their answers immediately become illogical and emotional. If someone could go out, spend $10 at Kentucky Fried Chicken for dinner, what's to stop them from buying a chicken and roasting it? It's not nothing. Because they're too goddamn lazy, that's why.
And we're not talking about the fat of those bellies that you see on kids that are starving in Africa.
Right.
We're talking about fat from eating fat things, that you could have bought some more healthy foods. So we couldn't get away with that. But you know, Frank, they do the same thing with the statistics for crime. Do you know that the only time a Hispanic is counted in the statistics as a Hispanic is when they're a victim of a crime by a white person? But if they're the ones that commit a crime, you know he's listed as a white person?
Yeah.
That's how vicious and how manipulative the left is, and how they will twist things for their own agenda. You know, it's open season on white people, and this is one of the ways that they manipulate statistics to make white people out to be the problem in America for everything.
And I'm telling you, what they'll do... I'll keep saying it because eventually we're going to get vindicated. They passed this theft of America. They passed this planned genocide. People will be categorized as pre-obese. Not just obese, but pre-obese. Because once you can have a national level of what obesity is, once you can have a national standard based on age, height, and what your weight should be, the government can fine you if you go over that. You'll have to check in to make sure you're maintaining your weight. And once you set the bar, you can drop the bar, whether it's how much money you make or how fat you are, how much you weigh. They will do this. They want to do it, and it is so dangerous because then they can control every aspect of your life. And by the way, before we go to that call, you know, John, the stink, stink, French are at it again.
Really? What now?
They're selling a modern battleship, a helicopter carrier, to the Russians. Now, why is this so dangerous? And the moment I saw it on TV, I knew how the Russians are going to use it. Because Ukraine shares the Black Sea. Georgia shares the Black Sea with Russia. And they can send that ship into the Black Sea, either to be used in battle or used to intimidate those two former colonies. And it used to be in the United States, Captive Nation Week. And in fact, there was a stamp album. I came across it at a show. They, you know, they have different albums that dealers put out in a box, you know, for people that have a specialty. And at one time, people collected just stamps of captive nations. And there was Captive Nation Week, where we honored, you know, the captive nations under the yoke and shackle of the Bolsheviks. So what happens is, Ukraine and Russia are arguing in the Crimea over the naval base at Sevastopol. Remember the movie with Errol Flynn, what was Charge of the Light Brigade? And because that was in the Crimean War, and they were fighting for Sevastopol. That's the Soviet naval base. That was a Russian naval base in the Black Sea. Well, now the Ukrainians are saying, no, now this is ours. This is part of Ukraine. You took it from us, and we are going to have it. This is part of our country. And this is an attempt by them to intimidate Ukraine and Georgia into capitulation to them. This is what the stinking French do. They are a bunch of backstabbers. Like I said during the Crusades, during the Battle of Vienna, when all the history of Europe hinged upon that battle for Vienna, what did they do? They were making deals with the Mohammedans to attack the Austro-Hungarians in the West. And they wouldn't send troops to aid them to fight the Mohammedan Turks. They are the greatest bunch of cowardly backstabbers in history. And once again, the stinking French show that's all they are. The filthy frogs are at it again.
And we thought we could trust Sarkozy. But, you know, French, you can't take the French out of the Frenchman. It always pops up somewhere along the line, even if they say something every now and then. Well, you know, we thought we had an ally again because he was bashing Obama, and he was really upset at his wishy-washiness in the delay in sending more troops. But, you know, England, and we'll get to Paul in a minute, Paul, so thanks for your patience. The British were criticizing Obama and this administration for not sending more troops or delaying the decision to send more troops to Afghanistan. But, you know, the British have pulled out, too. So
yeah.
Who are they really to criticize us? And
yeah.
Believe me, you know the way we feel about Obama. But, you know, if you're going to criticize us for not sending more troops, why didn't you keep your troops there?
Right.
Instead of pulling out?
That's right.
For political reasons. You're so concerned about what's going on there. Why don't you send some of your troops instead of pulling them out?
Well, you know what I think, John? I think here you have domestic political consideration taking precedence over foreign policy reality. And that is since it's become infested with Mohammedans in Britain. The most popular birth name for babies is Mohammed. And therefore, they don't want to upset the Mohammedan population of once Great Britain. Let's just call it England.
In other words, their country isn't theirs anymore.
Oh, no. No, their country is not theirs anymore. Their country has been, they turned it over. The left in their hatred of Western culture and Western civilization would rather turn their country over to Mohammedanist maniacs than have a strong patriotic country. That's their sick logic. They will rationalize their decision and their behavior in doing it. So you have here a domestic policy overwhelming a foreign policy.
Now, when are we going to start doing something because it's right for the world and for our own culture?
Well, you know, culture. George Bush should have nuked Tora Bora Mountain. He should have used nuclear weapons because using a plane to murder 3,000 people as a weapon, you know, in war, what's the limit? In war, the idea is to win, and the idea is to conserve your troops. That's why Harry Truman bombed the Japs. They would have known he had a weapon to end the war, and he didn't do it because he didn't want to seem brutal. Well, they would have hung him. Families of soldiers that would have been slaughtered in the invasion of Japland would have hung him. And that's the idea. Now, they had a chance to turn that mountain into a molehill, and that's what should have been done. It should have been done quick and mercilessly. Because if you'd show them that we're going to treat them as mercilessly as they treated those that they killed, believe me, you can take all the crap about the 72 virgins and going to Allah and all, believe me, they would have fled, and that would have been it. Because once they know that they think of themselves as an implacable foe, that they can't be reasoned or compromised, which they can't. So if you treat them the same way, they're going to know now that they have a foe that is exactly like them and maybe worse. Stalin, to give him credit, Stalin wiped out the Mohammedan fanatics in these countries, Uzbekistan, all the different stands, Tajikistan, you name the stand. He wiped it out. You know what he did? He just called them bandits. He said, well, they're bandits. They're not militants. They're not fighters. They're bandits, and we're going to get rid of them. And he got rid of them. He closed down mosques in those countries because he knew that they were breeding grounds.
Yeah.
And so that's how we should have handled it, and that's the only way to handle it.
Yeah, and we should be shutting down some schools that aren't even mosques here, and we'll get to that as soon as we get to Paul. I got a story on that.
Let's go to Paul in Sarasota, Florida. Happy Thanksgiving.
Paul.
Hi, Frank and John.
Good to hear from you.
Oh, it's great to talk with you gentlemen again. Is what fascinating tidbits about the French and... How very interesting that they cook the statistics on the Latino, where if you are a Latino crime victim, then you figure in the statistics.
Right.
If you're a Latino perpetrator, you are omitted.
Right. Especially if it's a white person who commits the crime against the Hispanic.
Oh, well, I'm sure. Yeah, and I'm wondering now, how about if it's a black on Hispanic crime? Do they make the black person invisible also?
No, then the Hispanic person would be considered a Hispanic. We can't have whites that are victims.
Well, would he be considered a white perpetrator?
If a Hispanic,
probably, yeah.
If a Hispanic commit? Yeah, anytime a Hispanic. Commit is
right.
The victim of a crime. If a Hispanic commits it against a black?
Right.
Oh, he'd be considered white.
Right. And I was going to say that if a black, but what about if a black commits a crime against a Hispanic? That's a real dilemma.
No, then the Hispanic will be counted as a Hispanic because he is a Hispanic. Anytime a minority.
How would they label the black? Would they call the black perpetrator white just to even it out?
Well, I don't know. That'd be a little bit more difficult to get away with. But look, Louis Farrakhan, I think it was Louis Farrakhan who said you can't trust Hispanics because they're white. So, you know, I wish Hispanics would know this because they always seem to side with the blacks against white people.
Yeah, even though in sections of L.A. that are being, what decent blacks are being routed by these hordes of illegal armies.
Mexicraps.
Yeah. I mean, these are real thugs, and they go in and they rout decent black families from these areas in L.A. We're not hearing about
now,
about
there
that.
Was a case 2 years ago where a black kid was a football player, got gunned down by Mexicraps, and the father was trying to get it classified as a hate crime, but they wouldn't do it. I was shocked because I didn't see Jackson and Sharpton and the usual suspects down there. They had four kids in Newark, New Jersey, were executed,
gangland
killed,
style.
Yeah, gangland style. They put guns in the back, made them kneel, put guns in the back of their head and murdered them. I think one lived. I said, you know, where are they? Where are the usual suspects? How come they're not marching and screaming? You didn't see, what's his name, that schmuck that Hannity panders to, Zulu Chavez and... Who went down to Texas and walked around with rifles but was met by white Americans and turned tail and fled when that guy shot those burglars. Here you had these kids murdered execution style. You didn't hear a word about that. That's what gets me, Paul. You know, the Ministry of Lies...
Of these crimes, there are hideous, hideous black-on-white crimes where they just pick... white kids at random,
yeah.
And they terrorize them.
Look
they
at that kid on the bus. Look at
that. They kill them and then mutilate and desecrate the remains. They do this to young girls as well as men. We don't hear a thing.
You know why?
It's on the net, but the garbage in the media won't talk about it.
Because the news guy calls it hush crimes. There's hate crimes when it involves a white person. There's hush crimes when it's black on white. Remember the kid on the school bus got beaten up a couple of months back? They had the tape of it. What happened? Where's the outrage?
Yeah, what outrage? Nothing. Zero.
Yeah. There's not enough figures in the universe to count the number of times where blacks were the perpetrator against whites and the case just quietly disappeared. I wish I had kept notes of them. That's a file that I don't have. But even if I started now, within a year, I'd probably have 100 cases.
Now, these crimes are, you see them on the net. Our press will, of course, never, ever stoop to covering such crimes because it just doesn't fit their agenda. They'd rather have some fatuous Palm Beach society boy like Matt Lauer go on and on about gun violence and how it's all gun manufacturers or a white conspiracy designed to wipe out blacks and all this other nonsense that they pander. But, you know, people believe that, then, hey, look, I can understand the media turning a blind eye. They're corrupt. They're communistic. They have been for decades.
Look at this.
If people want to find the truth, they can find it today.
Look at this professor that was just recently punched that girl. They were discussing race at the bar.
Yeah.
They both worked at Columbia University, and they got into discussion about privilege of white people, and I guess the black professor, didn't like that the white girl didn't agree that there's white privilege or something, and he punches her in the mouth. I haven't heard anything, you know, this, and it wasn't called a hate crime.
Other than seeing it on the net, no, our media would never talk about it. They'll bring up heavy things like, you know, is your locksmith charging you too much to install a deadbolt? Or, you know, can you really be sure the meat weighs what they say it does at the store? All these very serious issues. But, you know, this is why these bums are going broke. It's why they're a laughing stock. The American people are far more intelligent, at least I'd like to think many of them are, than the press gives them credit for. You know, you caught my ear, guys, just to jump gears real quick. We took a ride yesterday and made a few stops around, and just when you stop in to pick up a cup of coffee or get gas, what you were talking about, fatsos, I'm not trying to sound, I don't mean to sound pious. Weight is a real pain. Believe me, I'm one of these guys, if I walk past a dessert counter, I gain 10 pounds just for walking. But we are a nation of fatsos. And if people don't realize how this plays into the hands of our enemies abroad and, as you say, the dirtbags in this country that will cull the herd with all their little compulsions and coercions and, what, like you say, preemptive obesity restrictions with their health care euthanasia bill, they can't see this coming. This is the time now, as I see it, if you're thin, stay that way. If you got a weight thing, try and knock it off and stay healthy because they're gunning. They've made it clear they're gunning for the fatsos.
Oh, yeah. You know what they're going to do? They're going to demonize them. They're going to demonize. Oh, look at what fat people are costing this country. Look at these selfish fats. Oh, are you kidding me? It always happens in a Bolshevik country. Read Dr. Robert Conquest, Reflections on a Ravaged Century. Where he shows how they demonize the kulaks, that the demonize. Well, hold it right there. We'll get right back to Paul in Sarasota, Florida. And you at 718-761-9996. Go to TalkStreamLive.com and click on the bar for the right perspective to hear the rest of the show on the Internet. John?
Yeah, well, we'll end this portion of the show with a quote from the late, great Charlton Heston, who said, and I hope Obama is listening, quote, "To say that anyone is entitled not just to an even start but an even finish defies all reason," unquote.
Thank you. I want my country back.
Opinion, passion. It's the right perspective.
All right, we're back. This is The Right Perspective with John of Staten Island and Frank of Queens, and we've got Paul from Sarasota on the line just before we get back to him. You know, there's a lot of good things going on out there, folks, and we're going to see a lot of it next November. This story out of the New York Post last week, Fiorina Senate bid, Sacramento, California. Former Hewlett-Packard Company Chief Executive Carly Fiorina said yesterday she is running for the Republican nomination to battle liberal stalwart Barbara Boxer for her U.S. Senate seat. Fiorina ended months of speculation with an announcement that an opinion piece in the Orange County Register. Well, she picked a good year to do it, and I hope Barbara Boxer, as well as the rest of the Democrat communist leadership, get thrown out of office. All right, let's get back to Paul in Sarasota.
Welcome back, Paul.
That's interesting about Fiorina. Wasn't she done very dirty? I forget the details, but something happened with her where some kind of an old boy network did her a real injustice a few years ago.
Yes. She was the head of Hewlett-Packard, and they conspired to get rid of her. She was actually quite successful, but I don't know, somebody in the organization must have had some political connections or something, and they squeezed her out. So I'm glad to see that she's a Republican because, she was successful. She's got a good head on her shoulders, and she's attractive. That always counts. We have to take that into account in politics these days. And she should give Barbara Boxer a good run for her money because she doesn't hold back. She's very outspoken.
Well, it's... At least then she'll be they'll be well met because the people, the Boxers of the world, the Pelosis, they don't hold back for anything, and they don't necessarily, as we know, they don't care if it's whatever they say is true or not. In fact, the more outrageous and inflammatory it is, the more likely they are to say it.
The truth means nothing to them.
Oh, no, it's irrelevant. And of course, people. You remember that old quote Bobby Gray always used to say about the emperor, who gives him his power? We do. Yeah. I guess people go right along with it. I look at this thing now where these bums, these rat bag leeches, these leftover relics from the 60s who have been hiding out in academia for decades, sucking down the government grants to cook up these global warming theories, which is just, here again, like you say, Frank, just more euthanasia schemes to strip us of our liberty and wealth and then our lives. With their global warming theories, they get caught. What is this? That little voodoo school they run over there in East Anglia, England.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Yeah.
You know, and they're caught, and they just keep lying and...
It's another example of don't ever believe anything a liberal says. You can't go wrong.
I mean, it's like we were talking a few weeks ago. If you know them from the 60s, or if you weren't around, or but have read about them, it's like anything else. They're scammers. Why on earth would you believe them today? Back in the 60s, they were the dope dealers in college. They were the children of privilege who lived in the dorms. They were the good time men in the corridors, the bomb-throwing radicals. Well, what's changed? Nothing much.
No, not at all.
They've refined some of the, they've softened their language, but they're every bit as devious, as sly, as filled with hate and contempt for humanity. They want the earth as their little playground, and they want to get rid of most of us. It's understandable. You know, it's interesting. What do you think of, the writing's on the wall with 2010 that this is going to be a very, very sad comeuppance for a lot of these high-hat, arrogant demon rats that went crazy here in the past 8-9 months. Instinct keeps saying they're going to pull something because they're acting cavalier, dismissive, as if they're cocksure certain that all their schemes are going to be carried through, or that they'll just prevail, either because they're obtuse and they're underestimating how greatly they have caught the attention of the American citizens, or perhaps they have a trick up their sleeve. And knowing communist gangsters as I know them, they always get by on the cheat, on the trick. What's your impression of this?
Well, I think what will happen is they might try some of the stinking little dirty tricks that they pulled, like in New Jersey. Anyone that they think they can substitute another candidate for, you know, if it looks like they're definitely a loser, they might ask them to step aside in favor of other candidates, like they did in New Jersey when Torricelli, it was obvious that he was like 10 points down in the polls, and at the last minute, they demummified Frank Lautenberg to take his place and broke the law in doing it because it was below the 35-day deadline. And, of course, nobody did anything about that. So wherever they can try and save a seat, pulling tricks, something like that, or they'll suddenly they might try and have these illegal aliens, made legal, immigration reform just in time for the election. Yeah. You know, they're not beyond doing anything.
Oh,
they're truly evil.
I put no limits on them.
Yeah,
this is a crime.
That'll be the next agenda.
You know, I was out. I don't know how much national coverage you got, but in '96 in the fall, I was out in I was dividing time between here and California, working out there. And I remember very well the local talk shows were conservative shows were got the word out. Unfortunately, after the fact, that with this, what's his name, the Congressman Dornan from Orange County was put out by this Loretta Sanchez Brixey, who by way, I mean literally, they
and there was questions about that election. There was questions about that as well.
Yeah,
they bust Mexicans in. I mean, they're not even illegals; just people came up on a day trip from Mexico. They voted and they went back to Mexico.
They do anything they want. Nobody does anything about it.
Oh, nothing. Everything's fine and dandy. You know, we wouldn't want to insult it. We wouldn't want to insult their integrity by asking them for an ID or anything, right?
You know what it is? You see, Soviet history, they had the Lysenko affair where I think Yuri Lysenko was the scientist, but he was a toady of Stalin. And he just fudged and lied about all of his research. And it was proven later on that it was all a lie, but it was politically real. You have to understand, same thing with this global warming garbage. There's a hidden agenda here, and you're dealing, why do these people ignore the facts? Why do scientists, who are supposed to be the most open and rational of people, the same people who deride religion, will say, well, obviously there's no proof there's a God, but yet they'll tell you that there's proof that there's global warming. They know there isn't, and yet they'll lie about it because it's the idea. Whenever you're dealing with the left, Paul, always remember the idea. That comes first. It doesn't matter how many millions of people die, how much suffering there is, as long as the idea is realized. So they don't care. These are psychotic fanatics. They're more fanatical than any religion. I mean, they talk about religious fanatics. What's this? When you're a scientist and you try to discredit people who disprove you, when you try to put in false data to achieve your goal. And I'll tell you, there's got to be a day when we have a holiday after it's all over, and it's coming, called the day they hung the media, and have these bastards in the media swinging from lampposts, every single one of them, because they have gone along with this. They have lied to the American people. You see it in their different TV situation, whether it's a comedy or a drama. They always put the propaganda line. Movies that are in, remember that movie, The Day After Tomorrow, with global warming, and they put it in. Now, these bastards didn't know from Adam if that was true, but they wanted to believe it was true, and they wanted to propagandize the American people. And that's what they've been doing. They wanted to lay guilt on the American people. You know, one moron came out today. It was on Fox News ticker. Says that, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, is the worst day for the environment. Because,
oh, my.
Because people throw away the wrapping. Could you imagine how they would reduce us to the level of serfs in the Middle Ages. And anything we get, any little thing we get, we'd have to be so grateful. These are Environ pagans. They worship Gaia, the mother goddess. Their belief is that the earth is a living being, and that's how sick and how twisted they are. And the ministry, the media criminals that have stabbed America in the back, they're the ones that have to be dealt with because they've pushed this and pushed this. And let me say this about this foreign occupier. This guy is just a cipher. He's just a cipher. He's nothing else. He can read a cue card. He could read a teleprompter. This guy is a cipher. He doesn't have any great intelligence. What the irony is? He's like the two that crashed the White House party, who lied to get in, and people judged them on their image. Likewise, he was elected based on his image, but he's a fraud. He's a cipher. He's got people behind the scenes controlling him, and he's just regurgitating what they tell him to.
He's absolutely, the look in his eyes is vacant. You see that look in mugshots. There's nothing there. And with the media, you know, I can understand, as I say, I can understand the global warming thugs and then the ideologues who, as you say, so astutely, it's the idea with global warming. They just have to push this because if they keep talking about it, it'll become real in their mind. But the media, they don't necessarily have to go along with it, but they do. They are absolutely venal, and particularly in the way they pimp this scheme, where if you even dare question this scam, and it was obvious 20 years ago the global warming was a scam, just like the ozone hoax was a scam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Global cooling was a scam. Acid rain was another scam, all with a common goal: strip us of our liberty and our wealth and kill as many of us as they possibly can. And, you know, nothing has changed with these people, but that treat anyone who even questions these crack brain theories as a, you know, some kind of a moronic psychopath. How dare you, as if you're a heretic. Oh, hey, get used to it. We're going to continue.
Yeah.
We don't even question it. It's a scam. These people like that George Soros need to be laughed off the face of the planet with some good old Alinsky.
You know what gets me, Paul? A George Soros would be in jail awaiting charges of treason if J. Edgar Hoover were still alive.
Yeah.
Yes.
He would not be allowed to go around systematically trying to destroy this country. He would be declared a subversive.
That's right.
And he is a subversive.
He is.
You know, I heard him for the first time, John, a few weeks ago on a late night on a show. Someone was playing some clips of him talking, going on about the energy got to cost more energy. People got to pay more energy. Listening to this guy, I'm saying, you know, anyone who's walked down around the Lower East Side of Manhattan past a whorehouse, and if you've heard a ticket taker in a Lower East Side whorehouse, that's all this guy is. He didn't sound
right. But as usual,
he didn't sound decent.
No, but as usual,
like
with all liberals, Paul, he makes sure that he's gathered in as much money for himself as possible.
Oh, yes.
There goes Obama's teleprompter.
And you know what? See, if you had the House on Un-American Activities, none of this would happen. If you had J. Edgar Hoover, there would have been no September 11th. He would have been on. What they've done is they've revised the image of him of one of derision. You see it on the pseudo history channel with their docudramas, which are not real history, but nothing more than docudramas, propaganda.
Crap. I never, you know,
don't waste
the only
your time.
Stuff I watch on TV, I've got an antenna. I don't have cable. I got a TV antenna for the, if we want to catch like the local TV station, they run these HD channels that give you the weather constantly with a radar during hurricane season. Beyond that, just as you say, and you know, it's so disheartening when you talk to otherwise intelligent people, and they mean well, but they're trusting and frank, they'll tell you these, they'll say, oh, just as you're saying, they learned the truth about J. Edgar Hoover on a documentary on Discovery Channel, on the History Channel. And then you tell them, guys, It's like the same two or three companies own all these networks. They're all heavily biased to the left. Get yourself a book and read. Get on the net and read, because if you're just going to sit there and let this idiot box suck your brain cells out and replace it with poison, you're doing yourself a disservice. They look at you like you're from Mars. It's like, well, they wouldn't lie. It's on TV.
Right, of course.
Cool.
Of course, you know. they and it started out, you could see it, for example, when that book came out, said that on New Year's Eve at the Waldorf, J. Edgar Hoover was dressed as a woman. He was a cross-dresser. If you watch the movie about Charlie Chaplin, this son of a bitch who made millions in this country.
Communist.
Yeah, was in support, never denounced Stalin. He made the movie about Hitler, you know, the parody of Hitler, which, by the way, he stole from the Three Stooges, who did it far better.
Oh, yes.
Mose Hitler was, like, fantastic. And,
priceless.
And, you know, and there's Charlie Chaplin and the evil J. Edgar Hoover, and they're sitting at this table on New Year's Eve. That's how they kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And nobody ever said, wait a minute, what about Chaplin? Look at what Chaplin did. He never denounced Stalin. He never denounced the Stalin-Hitler pact. And then the son of a bitch ran to Switzerland so he could keep his money in Swiss banks and not pay income tax on it. But that's how they do it. And when people watch this garbage, it never comes to them. You know, there was a letter today in the New York Times about Fort Hood and terrorism, through three letters. Listen to an excerpt from one letter from Iman Hockey. He says, Major Hassan's heinous acts may have been inspired by his incorrect interpretation of Islam. I read you. That was an interpretation that I read. Slay the idolaters, and for each an ambush. That was right out of the Quran.
What's to interpret? Right? I think it's rather plain spoken.
Okay. And yeah. Incorrect. But as Mr. Wright points out, seeing the Fort Hood shooting as an act of Mohammedan terrorism is the first step towards seeing how misguided a hawkish approach to fighting terrorism has been. Oh, okay, so when they invaded Spain and occupied it for almost 800 years, the Spanish, who were in a corner of the north of the Iberian Peninsula, should have just accepted it. They should have just negotiated. Never mind the people that were, tens of thousands that were murdered and sold into slavery. Or another moron writes another letter saying, how do we separate devout Mohammedans who pose no threat from those who are on the verge of radicalization? We've done nothing to stave off the anger and desire for vengeance in many. How do we identify those potential terrorists who, before they strike, yet still make other Mohammedans feel like a key part of the American fabric? This son of a bitch went to medical school on our dollars. He went on our dimes. He was promoted as an officer in the United States Army. The United States Army ignored his trying to get in touch with Al-Qaeda. And this idiot Casey, who should have been dragged out, was more worried about a loss of diversity than 13 innocent lives that were murdered. And you know what? When they attacked the West, when they attacked the world, the known world at that time, when they went into North Africa and kicked out the Vandals, nobody was in there. Nobody was in Arabia. When they went into Spain, when they attacked France, when they attacked Eastern Europe, when they attacked Egypt, Syria, you go through the countries that were enforced into Mohammedanism. This is a load of crap. But that's how these people are so obsessed that we're bad in Muhammad. How do you deal with the, I guess then we deal with the murderers on September 11th. We deal with KMS who chopped off Daniel Pearl's head. We have to sit down and come to some kind of logical conclusion and show them that why we don't want to kill them. We don't want to make war with them. We want to peacefully come to a conclusion with them, a compromise. That's how sick they are.
They're sick, psychotic, and pure evil. I mean, let's use their favorite trick of putting someone else's words in another person's mouth. Let's imagine Douglas MacArthur speaking about how we must preserve our diversity, or General Patton,
yeah.
this is absurd. I mean, diversity. Here's a guy. This has nothing to do with diversity. This is a murderer. This is a maniac thug who openly expressed hopes of the same old thing, meeting Allah in the afterlife with the 50 virgins or whatever it is. He giddily lectured, apparently, at a Homeland Security conference on the virtues of chopping off heads and pouring boiling oil down the hall. And I guess that's okay. Guys, I got news. If I started blithering like that in my neighborhood, I'd probably get a visit from the cops, if not get carted off, and so would anyone else. But I guess as long as you wear a one of those pie hats and a bed sheet and you're in the military, I guess it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah, well, like I said, first of all, when they talk about PTS, oh, he didn't go to war, but he must have had pre-traumatic stress disorder. Let's look at history honestly. Nobody said it, so if you hear it anywhere else, you know you heard it here first. Hitler suffered from PTS. He spent 4 years in the trenches as a front fighter. He was a messenger, which was the most dangerous job in the army. He was gassed and blinded and in the hospital. Obviously, he was suffering from PTS. So how can we judge a man who was suffering from the same thing that they claim that this Mohammedan murderer was suffering? Who are we to judge? Don't you think we should have compassion and understanding? Say that to one of them. Say that to one of them and watch their face.
You know, guys, until you mention that, I never knew that, but I'm just thinking about this. Now that you mention it, can't you really make a case that his murder of millions of Jews and other people, just ordinary citizens, as well as the destruction and the war he caused, really, it kind of speaks to his sense of self-restraint and meekness and mildness, doesn't it, that he only killed 6 or 8 or 10 million people? Because really, a guy that went through his ordeals as a messenger, he'd probably kill 100 million and justifiably so, wouldn't he?
Well, of course.
I mean, looking at it from a psychotic leftist point of view.
Yes. I mean, the man, look at how the man was traumatized in the trenches of World War I, the industrial killing that he witnessed, watching his comrades be butchered. Of course that's what happened. So, you know, who are we to judge? If we're going to say this about this Mohammedan bastard, obviously you have to apply this where the application is most germane. And this is an application of their reasoning and their logic. But if you confront them with it, they'll try to brush it aside. But no, you can't, because you're thinking like they are. And the one thing the left hates more than anything is to turn their arguments on them, to use their reasoning on them. So they'll turn around and make any excuse imaginable. This wasn't terrorism. He was just a homicidal maniac. But it says in the Quran, Tim McVeigh, his favorite book was the Turner Diaries. This guy's favorite book was the Quran. Now, in World War II, if you had a German-American officer in the army who decided one day, you know what, I'm going to put on an SS uniform or a brown shirt uniform, and I'm going to walk around the base telling everybody that they should join National Socialism, we shouldn't be at war with Germany, and hand out copies of Mein Kampf, well, what do you think would have happened to him? But we don't even want to acknowledge with this foreign occupier, this cipher in the White House, that we are. This is history. And the one thing I've said you can't run away from is history. No matter how you try, you can't run away from history. And this is what we're running. You know one of the biggest threats is going to be to the West, and it's going to come back to haunt us? I was watching today James Bond, the best one of them, Dr. No, where he goes to Turkey.
Yes.
Turkey has a secularism, which was started by Kemal Atatürk after World War I. You know, the Ottoman Empire was called the sick man of Europe. And he saw how Mohammedanism, with superstition, backwardness, under Mohammedanism, people are not taught to think for themselves. That's why they don't produce anything. You look at their countries, every country is a crap hole. And the world moves on, but they stay primitive crap holes. And Turkey, while it has a secularist elite, he had the gospel of secularism, the credo of secularism in Turkey to turn it around and modernize it. They stopped wearing the fez. Well, what happened is now you have a conservative Mohammedan government in power. And I am telling you right now, Paul, that government, that country is going to turn on the West. You could have Mohammedan pilots in it. Eventually, when they move the secularists out, you're going to have one that is going to decide that he wants to bomb Athens and give it back to the Greeks, or bomb Rome where the Vatican is. You watch what's going to come out of Turkey.
Well, I agree, and they will justify it by saying that this country has, that Turkey was always a good ally of this country, but our leftist communist elite in this country went out of its way to offend the secular government of Turkey every which way they could for years, always gave them a short shrift, and I agree with you. You know, while I was listening to it, I'm thinking of the yet another in a long laundry list of terrorist attacks that was ignored by the Bubbas during the 90s when that Egypt Air 990 co-pilot seized the plane, and the communist crooked scumbag media excused it by saying, oh, the poor pilot, the co-pilot had mental problems. The pilot got up to use the laboratory, and the poor co-pilot, he prayed for forgiveness to Allah and put the plane into a dive. No, he wasn't praying forgiveness. He was saying, hey, here I come, Allah, get the Virgin ready.
That's right. And you had, back in the middle 90s in the Empire State Building, you had a Mohammedan murdered six people on top of the Empire State Building, shot them to death. And the Clinton regime would not recognize that as a terrorist attack. So this has been going on.
When was this? I didn't even hear about this.
Yeah, what was that, John? 95, 96?
Yeah, he was up there at the observation tower and shot.
Clinton's probably tried to pin it on the Rush Limbaugh whipping up the gun lobby, right?
Right.
Yeah, and they would not acknowledge that as a terrorist attack.
I'm going to have to look that one up in the net. Isn't that interesting? Just like the attack on the young Jewish Women's Center, or YMCA, YMJA, or YWJA in Spokane or Seattle a few years ago.
Right.
Where a guy singled it out, and he said he attacked them because it was filled with Jewish women. That's where you could attack and kill more Jews. Oh, no, it's not a terrorist attack, said the media.
You know, because that's political alcoholism, where you refuse to believe, admit you're an alcoholic. They refuse to believe the political realities. Now, when you had that guy in Los Angeles attack the Jewish day school, and he shot up, remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, now, look at how the media covered that. Oh, he was filled with racism and hatred, and, oh, we've got to stop this hatred in our country. We've got to, you know, all of this. Yet here you had this bastard in Fort Hood, and they refused to acknowledge what this is, that this is an outgrowth of Mohammedanism. Mohammedanism waged war on the West for 1,000 years until they were defeated at the gates of Vienna and until Hungary was recovered from them. So what you're seeing, what you saw for 300 years was the abnormal. Peace is the abnormal. What you're seeing now is the normal. Go back. All you got to do is read their history and see how they attacked the West. And they continually say how they were... George Bush couldn't use the word crusade. What, are you kidding me? Next year, we're almost at 2010, 2011. You watch how they're going to celebrate the golden age of Spain under the Moors and how wonderful it was, forgetting that they conquered it by force. They illegally occupied it. We are occupying Iraq and Afghanistan. They occupied Spain and part of Europe. And that they're going to ignore. So you get ready. I am telling you, watch. From January 1st, 2011 on, you watch the lies and propaganda. We're going to go, Paul. Good talking to you.
Yep. Hang in there, Paul, because we've got a couple more stories about how we're in danger, not only in the military, letting these diversified savages into the military now and undermining our military, but it's really all over. And We've got to start doing something about it. We've got to resurrect the great J. Edgar Hoover. We're coming back. Hi, everyone. This is John of Staten Island from The Right Perspective, and my buddies, the great Frank of Queens, my broadcasting partner, and the news guy producer extraordinaire of The Right Perspective, want to tell you that your patience has been rewarded. That's right. All 125 volumes of The Best of John and Frank are now available on a two DVD set in MP3 format. Now, these calls to all your favorite hosts, and some you may have forgotten, cover a 25-year period from the mid-1970s to the early 2000s. It's a virtual record of talk radio and historical events, but most of all, when talk radio was fun to listen to. Believe me, you're going to hear the difference from today's Rush Through the Calls format. Now, volumes 1 through 125 of The Best of John and Frank can be purchased for $29.95. We pay the shipping price. It doesn't cost that much to mail a couple of DVDs. And also available for an additional $10 or $39.95 in total are the Wars volumes, the Sliwa Wars, the Kenny from Brooklyn Wars, the Al from Queens Wars, and the WOR Radio Wars, when Frank and I used to battle all these mostly obnoxious hosts on that station for over 2 years. These alone are worth the price. They're a riot. And an explanation of all the Wars tapes will be included so that you know what they're all about. Now, we don't know of anyone else who's recorded such an extensive record of calls to talk radio. You won't find these anywhere else. So here's the deal. You make a check or money order out to WWCR, not John and Frank, the same way as when you send money to help us keep the show on the air. Make that check or money order out for $29.95 to WWCR for volumes 1 through 125 of The Best of John and Frank, or $39.95, which includes all the Wars volumes. Mail it to Frank and John, Box 117-9508 4th Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11209. Now, these MP3 DVDs will play on your home computer if you have a DVD drive, and they'll play on your portable DVD player if it plays MP3 files. I say that because not all DVD players play MP3 files, even though it says it does. Once again, $29.95 for The Best of John and Frank, Volumes 1 through 125, $39.95 for The Best of John and Frank, Volumes 1 through 125, and all of the Wars tapes. Frank and I and the news guy want to thank all of you for your support and loyalty to The Right Perspective over the years, and we know you're going to enjoy The Best of John and Frank, Volumes 1 through 125.
He betrayed me! He betrayed you! He betrayed
John and Frank!
The judge will like that one.
Yeah. And this is The Right Perspective, and you at 718-761-9996, 718-761-9996. You know, when they write these letters, that's what you call verbal effluvia, verbal garbage, because they try to sound like they're so intellectual and they're so intelligent. First of all, If Hassan's act may have been inspired by a misguided hawkish approach, by a misguided interpretation of Mohammedanism, well, how come there's not thousands of them out there protesting? Where were they? Why weren't there tens of thousands of them out there protesting this? How come you have mosques, was it, John, 10% of mosques, are preaching hatred and murder?
I'll bet you it's a hell of a lot more than that.
Yeah, so where are...
I'd be surprised if it's all of them, Frank.
Yeah, well, where are they? How come they're not doing anything about it? Notice the trick of throwing it back on us. It's our fault. We've driven him to do that. All right, did they say when Tim McVeigh blew up the Murrah building that the Clinton regime with their genocide at Waco drove him to do that? Did they go through all of this arcane and convoluted reasoning on that? Oh, he was a militiaman and a Christian fundamentalist, and he was a hater and a racist. But this bastard is just parroting, just regurgitating, reiterating what he hears in those mosques. And I don't hear how come you don't have Mohammedans going into these mosques and dragging these imams out and beating the crap out of them? How come? How come they're not going in there and saying, look, we're not going to be part of a religion that preaches hatred. You're preaching hatred and murder, which is not our belief. We're getting you out of here. How come?
And everything is an embarrassment to them except what they do.
Yeah, yeah. So where are they? It lies in themselves, not in us. They were welcomed into this country. They've done very well in this country. They've been treated extremely well in this country. They got a stamp now for Eid, their holiday. They're treated as a major religion. You've got a cipher, a foreign occupier, saying that America was founded on Mohammedanism among... No, it wasn't. Had nothing to do with it. They had a United States World Religious Conference in something like 1899. One Mohammedan showed up. One. There weren't millions in the country then. This guy was more or less just an exception rather than the rule. So I want to know why they're not doing anything about it. How come? How come when it comes to the Catholic Church, people speak out that are Catholics and criticize the church? You turn on TV, there are priests who are criticized from different orders criticizing church doctrine or church policy. How come you see that with the Jews? You take two Jews and you get three opinions. How come you don't have that with the give and take about with Jews that they have? How come? How come you don't have that with all the different Protestant denominations? They're the only ones. So don't tell me it's not monolithic. It is monolithic. And I'm tired of the blame being put on us. Let them clean up. I want to see them go into one of those goddamn mosques and drag the hater out and say, you're not going to be preaching here anymore, and we're going to close this mosque up and clean it out and reopen it. But they don't. Instead, this is what got me about these letters, John. I couldn't, really understand why I was getting more and more angry. And the anger comes from them blaming us and not blaming themselves. If they're moderate, you go out. And you speak about moderation. Don't tell me they're being pushed over our actions. They're goddamn lucky that this nation is now a nation of spineless weaklings. Because another time in another America, when they blew up those towers, believe me, they would have cleaned out mosques in this country. They would have forbade this religion. They would have been attacked on the street. The American people are very kind and very gentle people. So don't give me your crap.
Yeah, and... It's amazing how we put up with so much, and that they just caught us at the right time. It's unfortunate that we've turned. And Savage said something, believe it or not, that was very true the other day when I was listening. We went from Patton to this guy Casey.
Yeah.
what happened?
Yeah. And so, here's another. Here's to show you the fanaticism.
Cheryl, hold on, we'll be right with you.
Of these enviro loonies. Satellite found on water on the moon, researchers say. What is it about space discoveries that makes NASA scientists crow like overgrown boys? See, they're just boys. What has been discovered on the moon? Great. This probable legacy of billions of years of cosmic history is important. The letter is comic. But a recent panel concluded that the moon was a poor objective for the next human space flights. Now listen to this. Listen to the pomposity and stupidity, the arrogance and the insanity, because you got to be insane to say this, and hatred for our system. And besides, and I could hear this guy saying it's so indignant, that's why I use that inflection, even if the moon holds water for the taking, Why should we treat it as the coal company? Yeah, treat it as the coal companies have treated West Virginia. Our venerable neighbors in this universe deserve better. You stupid bastard.
Who's the neighbors? Would have got life on the moon or something?
You know, well, we shouldn't go to other planets and mine over there and take their minerals because we're going to come there. And who are we to come to this planet and take from it? It's not ours. We have no right to it.
You know, it's so stupid. First of all, you ought to try reading a little bit of scripture. The Lord said that he gave you a mind, and you're going to be held responsible for how you use that mind and, you know, how you make life better for yourself. And when you get to the gates of heaven, brother, you're going to be held responsible. Why didn't you improve, you know, things for yourself? God wants us to find these things. He wants us to be able to use the resources that he's put in the universe for us. And if that's the case, why use any resources that we have here on the earth? Why? They might belong to somebody else who might find life on this planet. Well, why should we use them? And, you know, these are people who will make sure that they have all of life's
right.
creatures, though.
Creature comforts.
Creature comforts. So, and, before we get to Cheryl, how do you like Martha Stewart's idiotic remark about Sarah Palin being dangerous and boring? This is a woman with a monotone voice that could put your feet to sleep.
And is a criminal.
And is a criminal. And manipulated stocks on Wall Street
yeah.
for her own financial benefit. What is more dangerous than that, to manipulate the financial system of this country and undermine it? And this is what she said.
She's a very boring to me. Very boring. And a very, to me, kind of a dangerous person. I mean, she's dangerous.
So anybody who disagrees with liberals, you ever notice how they're labeled dangerous? But believe it or not, the people on CNN actually took her to task. I was shocked. And here's some of the remarks that they made.
In what way? She's so confused. And anyone like that in government is a real problem.
Meanwhile, they're saying her book is already a bestseller. Do you find
it? Her. Good for her.
Have you been able to catch Sarah Palin's interview?
Why is everybody asking that? I wouldn't watch her if you paid me.
Little jealousy
Martha
there?
Martha turning up the heat there. As I watched this, I was thinking, hey, Martha, what did Sarah Palin ever do to you? Hilo, why do you think she's so riled up?
I think because if Sarah Palin ever got a talk show, she would whoop Martha Stewart's ass. I mean, the reality is even Oprah said it. Oprah's like, so are you going to be my competition? You know what? Yes, Hollywood's never going to accept Sarah Palin. But you know what? In middle America, the rest of the country, they love her, and she could rival Oprah on the talk show circuit. I have no doubt about that.
Rachel, let me ask you this. How do you think that Sarah would respond to Martha, who is saying that she's boring, she's dangerous?
I think she would say, Martha, that's pretty funny. The woman who thinks cake stands and sconces are fascinating is calling me boring. I mean, really, Sarah Palin is probably the most famous woman in the world this week. And, you know, I think Martha's not too keen on that.
And I love the whole dangerous thing, because on paper, who's been to prison? Who's
more
dangerous?
Exactly. Right. Who's actually more dangerous right now? Yeah, obviously Sarah Palin is really getting under Martha Stewart's skin. And what she told Showbiz Tonight became a viral video today. It is everywhere.
Well, just boycott her books, boycott her show. And this is the moron that said, oh, I couldn't read a 2,000-page bill for the health care. Well, you're a moron. And then she attacked, Rachel Ray.
Yeah.
Said that she is not a cook, and her books are just a rehash of her
other
books.
Sounds like she's very insecure.
Very bitter. Very bitter old douchebag. Nobody wants her around. You know, she's just shown what she is. She, you know, and who cares? Who cares what this moron says? She's just, I don't care how much money she made, she's a moron, she's a political ignoramus. Who cares about her opinion? Who cares?
And she's boring.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to
Cheryl, and she's not.
Hey, Cheryl.
Hello, Frank. Hello, John. That Martha Stewart, if it wasn't for her husband, she would be a nobody. He put her picture, because she used to be a model, so she photographed good. He put her picture on a cookbook, and that's what started everything. And then when she became big, she kicked him out. She argued with him. This is a good husband. He made a star out of her. She gets rid of him, shows you the mentality from way back. Moron is a mild word to describe her. You were talking about that murderer at Fort Hood, that he killed the 13 American soldiers. You know what? They have never put in the press. They have never put in the press that as a psychiatrist, as somebody who the soldiers would go to for some help, for please, you know, help me trying to get back from the battlefield to normal everyday living, as though there's such a thing like normal everyday living. I want to know if he counseled anybody to commit suicide. They say that the suicide rate is high. I want to know about people that he has counseled. What type of counsel has he given them?
Yeah.
It has never been put into the papers either.
Never released.
And you know, I can't stand the new movies. I don't go to the new movies because I can't stand the philosophy of today's Hollywood. But I remember old movies, and this brings to mind, I haven't seen the movie in years. I don't have a TV. I don't have a video. I don't have a DVD. But years ago, Stanley Kubrick made a movie, Paths of Glory, and Kirk Douglas starred in this movie. And what it was that the army, I think it was the Americans. It was the French. It was with the Germans. I don't even know if it was World War. I think it was World War II because he made the movie a little bit after World War II. And Kirk Douglas had to have a court martial for three American soldiers and had to execute them.
Wait,
they had to
was that
sacrifice
no.
their
You're talking about
own.
Paths of Glory?
Paths
no,
of
that
glory.
Had nothing to do with the Americans. The story was, and to this day they will not show that movie in France. It was three French soldiers who refused to charge when they were given the order.
Right.
And the reason came out that they refused to charge is because they were being fired on by their own guns. Adolf Monjou, who played the general, knew that they were innocent. And he told Kurt Russell, and he says, well, you know, executions every once in a while are good for the men. So here were these innocent men being executed by the French military because they didn't want to admit, it was World War One. They didn't want to admit that they were firing on their own men. And that's when Kirk Douglas said to him to the effect, and you're a degenerate old man.
Yeah. Right. These soldiers who were killed, who were murdered at Fort Hood, they're totally disregarded. It's passed over in the media. They don't even discuss 13 soldiers that they're focusing on this, the one who did it. They won't even say his name. They want to say, oh, it's a medical thing. It's that he's mentally incompetent. Who cares? Kill him. Don't even bother with a trial. This is an awful situation. And they're going to take three Navy SEALs and put them before a military tribunal, but they're going to have traffic court.
Right. They'll try the three Navy SEALs, but Eric Holder will turn through loose FALN terrorists, so Hillary can get the Hispanic vote.
Right. And it's all upside. upside down. It's all, it's not even reality. This is an awful situation, and this is what we have for today. This is the world today. They said that when we get into the 21st century with the year 2000, oh boy, when we get to the year 2000, great technology, everything new, everything modern, everything so up to date. This is what they bring us. This is what they give us. This is how they define democracy and liberty. This is awful. This is a terrible situation. Also, what I want to say is you guys do a great job. The Right Perspective is the greatest of all the talk radio shows that there is.
Now, thanks, Cheryl, and you, because you partake in it as well.
I thank you very much, John. Thank you. That's a tremendous compliment.
It's true.
And I want you to know that with listening to the AM talk radio shows, they were all shashtil, all shtillinka hate. Nobody wanted to say anything against Corzine. Oh, they were all quiet. Yeah. Before the election, they were talking about Virginia. They were talking about the guy up in District 23. That was
Hoffman.
All the coverage they were going on. But they hardly spoke about Corzine. They were so intimidated by his money, they figured he would win re-election. And now that the election is over and Chris Christie has won, which is really a miracle, because to go up against all that money is just unbelievable. This is all they're talking about on AM radio.
I want to find out what happened. I want to find out what happened with Tom Suozzi.
Tom Suozzi
in Long Island. I haven't heard the final results yet, or maybe they're still counting the votes.
They're still counting.
If you hear anything, Cheryl, let me know.
They're still counting. Last I heard, they're still counting.
That's ridiculous.
And out here in New Jersey, what are they talking about? Oh, there's no money. All of a sudden, now that the election is over, they're finding that, there's no money here, there's no money there, and how are they going to meet the bills? And the deficit is going to be bigger than they ever figured. They can't pay for this. They can't pay for that. How are they going to meet their debt obligations? All of the problems. They couldn't come out and say before the election that New Jersey is broke. We are broke out here in New Jersey. If Corzine really wanted to do something good with all of his millions, he could have put it into the state and helped the different agencies and to help the people. But no, he used the money he thought for his own glory. He intimidated all of the media, the newspapers, the radio, and the money was astronomical, what he said. It was a disgusting situation, and the media did not give the proper attention to New Jersey. We are broke, and they'll say, the problems that Chris Christie is going to face, they knew about this from way back, and they, the media, are the culprits.
Well, the media criminals. They've stabbed America in the back. Now, you see the story out of Dubai today?
How do you like on a day when the stock market is only open half a day, when everybody is visiting family or they're at the malls? Nobody was paying attention to the news today, and they come out with Dubai can't pay the bills there. They have bonds. The interest is due. They can't meet the payment. This is a terrible worldwide
situation. There's more to this story than they're letting on.
More to it. Definitely more.
And this government's going to go broke when interest rates go up and they have to pay off debt. We're on the precipice of a financial holocaust.
It is a terrible situation. I hate to think what's going to happen. But, Frank, you have said it, a financial holocaust.
Yeah, and you know what gets me? How could Dubai, what would have happened if Dubai would have been in charge of the ports?
Frank, I was just thinking that. I swear to God.
Great mind.
I was going to bring it up.
Think alike. What would have happened? How would they have paid for it?
Well, with all of the trade going back and forth with the ports, they would have had a nice cash flow that they could tap into before that cash got to the proper parties.
You know, what's happening to the cash that they made from their oil? I mean, the whole country, when you look at the country, it was modern Dubai. You see these skyscrapers. They built some development, you know, and in the shape
golf
of a
courses.
Yeah, in the shape of a palm tree, and what's his name? Beckham was supposed to live there. What's going to happen? What happened to, where did all the money go? That's what I want to know. They were rolling in it. They were filthy. What happened to the money? And $60 billion, by today's standards, is not a huge amount. If they can't pay that, then how much do they actually have?
It is just based upon words that they were using, pictures that they were showing, we're going to have this, we're going to do that. And the money, it was not behind it. It was all fluff and pretense. And a lot of money was committed by big-time companies. Oh, we're going to open up an office here. We're going to establish a store. We're going to have this, we're going to have that, just like what has happened with South Africa. All of a sudden, with all of the jewels and all of the diamonds, everybody's cutting in on the market. Everybody's showing up, and they want their cut, their share. In Dubai, oh, we have a commitment from this one. Oh, we have money from that one. And it's all a picture, all a design. We're going to build this. It's in the process of being built. It's just a hole in the ground.
Well, you know, Cheryl, before you go on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend, we are celebrating the fact that WABC gave quite a Sliwa a one-way ticket to Palookaville. Did that moron think that people want to hear his stupid Italianism? Disgraziata, I need a wartime consigliere. His constant harping about John Gotti Jr. night after night. He's a punk and a bully and a coward because he knows that they can't do anything to him. And he attacks the man's family, you know, like any bully would do. And he hides behind the microphone doing it to them. And people, you know, and you see, the whole thing came down to this, Cheryl. I told this many times. When his contract was going to be up, I said, Citadel is not going to pay this functional, illiterate, media shyster and degenerate liar $800,000 a year to sit behind the microphone with his inane, moronic crap. Some guy out of, you know, he's got affiliates around the country, but they're $2 stations. Do you think some guy out in the middle of America wants to hear this idiot with his stupid, moronic gibberish night after night? He's getting kicked off the Boston FM station that he's on because they hate New York up there, and they're going to hear this idiot talk about New York every night and the Ghani trial. People don't want to hear that. He's, you know, he has absolutely no talent and even less intelligence. So Citadel, which is really strapped for cash, and if you notice, Cheryl, it's quite ironic. It's come back full circle on ABC. When they first started, if you remember, it was all syndicated programming. Michael Jackson, not the queer that died, but the English guy who always got me because he couldn't say pasta, he'd say pasta instead of him. Dr. Tony Grant, who really wasn't bad. And now, to save money, the whole lineup is all syndicated from 6 in the morning till 6 the next morning. And they weren't going to pay this idiot who has a small syndication. They're not going to pay this moron $800,000 a year to hear his stupid gibberish, plugging his scam organization night after night, telling you how they tried to kill me two times, and they hit me with a baseball bat twice, but he never brought any charges on any of those attacks. They don't want him. So he's on a one-way ticket to Palookaville, and it's going to kill him, because if this is a hung jury, he won't be on TV. Now, what are the choices he has? Well, knowing him, he'll probably show up at the courtroom, and if Gotti is a hung jury, he'll start screaming in the courtroom, you know, to get his mug in the paper. Now, Gotti, he doesn't understand something. It's a hung jury, but he's assuming that they're deliberating to find a man guilty. They may say, you know what, this guy is really innocent. And so what is he going to do if he's acquitted and found innocent? So he's just looking at it from his pre-Paleolithic mindset that the guy is automatically guilty. It's not true. The guy may wind up walking away from this being acquitted. So right there, but he won't be on TV. Now, what is he going to do after that? Well, he could have his son kidnapped and say it was the mob. They kidnapped my son. But that won't work because people know it's a scam, and he really would wind up in jail this time. B, he could have his wife kidnapped, but then again, they'll know that it's a fraud. And by the way, I think she's going to dump him. Now that the money's run out, you watch how quickly she puts him on a one-way ticket to Palookaville. Or he may have his car shot up and say, the mob trying to kill me. You know, I mean, this degenerate liar and media shyster will do anything. He'll say anything. He'll be anything. Remember when Bob Grant and Jay Diamond were on ABC, and Jay Diamond with his night after night, you should fly the American flag. Well, you know, you do it in that affectation of his. So what happens? You turn it on 2 in the morning. Yeah, you should fly the American flag there. Fly the flag. I fly the flag. The day that Grant got fired, the same night, oh, you right-wing loony kazoony freakazoids out there. I can't take, you know, he's a chameleon. Well, now the act is over. He's on a one-way ticket to Palookaville. And if he goes, they're saying he'll go to NYM, which is 970 The Apple. Yeah. But nobody really listens to that. Bill Bennett's on at 7 in the morning. I listen to him. He's not bad. They have Dennis Miller, who I really don't care. You know, and they have Cal Thomas and, you know, the usual lineup. But the station loses power after sundown. So how could he replace Bill Bennett? I mean, he's going to be on 6 in the morning talking about the Gattos and the Gambinis to the rest of the country. Do you think people want to hear this garbage?
No way.
So he'll go to the radio gulag of UAB-TV, which is an internet provider, and that's where he'll stay. I mean, if he went to NYW, I mean, what would he say? I'm broadcasting from beautiful downtown Hackensack, New Jersey. So...
Did you hear our little thing that we put together on his firing, Cheryl?
No, I didn't.
Oh, let's play that again.
I'll play it for you.
You're fired.
But I'm a crime fighter.
You're fired.
We're crime fighters. Come on.
You're fired.
As you know, I got to watch my back now more than ever before.
You're fired.
Later for that. Phenomenal.
You're fired.
This is a great day of celebration.
Victory. If we can't be here on WABC.
Stop whining.
Maybe a Murphy Burke or someone out there can buy another radio station and keep the voice of New York going. No, I don't want to overturn what is done here. The bosses have made their decision.
You're fired.
You people can try, but who knows? Maybe out there, there's another radio station. If we can't be here, we will continue to be the voice of former New Yorkers, present New Yorkers, and all those who at one time or another wanted to be a New Yorker.
Whatever.
You're fired.
I did it my way.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, one way.
I love it. It's terrific.
Thanks. A one-way ticket to Palookaville.
Let me tell you, when it comes to the syndicated shows, you are so correct. during lunchtime, I tune into the big talker from Philadelphia to listen to Rush Limbaugh. Mm-hmm. And at night, I like to hear the opening of the Mark Levin show, which did become syndicated. Once he goes to take telephone calls, he's not good on the telephone, but his opening monologue is good. And that's what I listen to on 770. I don't like the rest of their programming, and I'm tired of the news on CBS 880. I'm tired of them. I tune into Bloomberg. They give you the business news. They talk a little bit slower. On 880, they give you the show in between all of the commercials. They're so interested in giving you commercials that they have to talk fast in order to just give you the headlines and rush to the commercial. On Bloomberg, at least you get the news. At least you hear what they're talking about. Today, on CBS, they were saying that the stores are doing well. It's Black Friday, and the retailers will be in the black. You tune into Bloomberg, they're very worried about the retailers. The retailers are not stacking the shelves with a lot of inventory. They don't want to get stuck with inventory. Last year, they had the worst Christmas in four decades. They're very worried about this year.
Cheryl, I wonder if they don't do too much business. I wonder if they're going to force them to change the name from Black Friday to something else, because there'll be some kind of racial...
Well, you remember the host, John, that we used to call on the Long Island, the black guy, and he goes, I don't know why they got to call it Black Friday. Well, moron, because the stores want to be in the black.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get going. Cheryl, good talking to you.
Have a good week and a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
And all right, Cheryl. And
let me just mention this. It was an op-ed piece in the Times. 65 years ago, Ike made a blunder that led to the Battle of the Bulge. And what happened was Lieutenant General Jacob L. Devers looked across the muddy waters into Germany, and he saw that there wasn't anyone in southern Germany. And what had happened is the United States 7th and French 1st Armies, 350,000 men, had landed August 15th near Marseille, an invasion largely overlooked by history but recorded at the time as the second D-Day. They advanced through southern France to Strasbourg. No other Allied army had yet reached the Rhine, not even hard-charging George Patton. Devers dispatched scouts over the river, and there's nobody in those pillboxes, the soldier reported. Defenses on the German side of the Upper Rhine were unmanned, and the enemy was unprepared for a cross-river attack, which could unhinge the German southern front and possibly lead to the entire collapse from Holland to Switzerland. That's because we're coming up now to the Battle of the Bulge. He had wanted to advance, but Eisenhower stopped him and ordered him to stay on the Rhine's west bank and attack enemy's positions in northern Alsace. Devers was stunned. "We had a clean breakthrough," he wrote in his diary. "By driving hard, I feel that we could have accomplished our mission. Instead, the war of attrition continued, giving the Germans a chance to counterattack 3 weeks later in what became known as the Battle of the Bulge, which cost Americans 80,000 dead and wounded. Garrison Davidson, then Devers' engineering officer and later a West Point superintendent, believed Devers' attack would have succeeded and preempted the Bulge. Writing, he said, "I've often wondered what might have happened had Ike had the audacity to take a calculated risk, as General Patton would have." Patton wrote in his diary that he also believed Eisenhower had missed a great opportunity. The 7th Army's commander, Lieutenant General Alexander Patch, felt the same way. Why did Eisenhower do this? Eisenhower disliked Devers, so this was a personal thing, because he considered him a prim teetotaler who rubbed many gruff American Army commanders the wrong way and refused to include him among the generals fighting in northern France. Devers was appointed to lead the southern invasion by Army Chief of Staff George Marshall. Eisenhower would have likely have fired Devers once the 6th Army Group fell under his command in September 1944, but Devers had powerful patrons in Marshall and President Franklin. Eisenhower was also a cautious, some would say indecisive, commander who favored a broad front strategy with all Allied armies moving in tandem on a solid front. His military objective was Germany's main industrial area to the north, the Ruhr. Devers was operating far too south to help that. It says, true, the Germans knew the Ruhr was vital to them and fiercely defended him. But, as we know from several of their generals' post-war memoirs, what they really feared was an incursion across the Rhine, which would have been a military catastrophe and a symbolic blow to the German people. The Rhine wasn't crossed until March 1945. Had Eisenhower let Devers make his attack, we now might be celebrating the 65th anniversary of a cross-Rhine attack that quickly ended the war in Europe. Instead, we'll soon mark the anniversary of the costliest battle in American history, the Battle of the Bulge. And remember, it was Eisenhower who had our troops pull back and allowed the Russians first to come into Berlin because he said, well, they took the brunt of the fighting. But look at what a fiasco that turned out to be.
And let's not forget, Thomas Sowell said, what does economic justice mean?
Yeah.
Except that you want something that someone else produced without having to produce anything yourself in return.
That's right. Or socialism is, you've got what I want, and I'm going to get the government to steal it for me.
Yeah.
It's jealousy.
Yeah.
Socialism is economic jealousy.
Yep.
Let's go to Steve. Oh, by the way, what happened with Tiger Woods, John?
I think we're going to find out that the whole story on that. I don't think what we're hearing on the news right now is the whole story. He backed out into a fire pump and then crashed into a tree.
Yeah.
Look, first of all, once you back into a fire pump, sure, you're going to hit the brake. What are you doing? You know, suddenly crashing into a tree. Something doesn't sound right there.
No, not at all. And maybe the guy was, he probably was high on something. And then the wife takes the golf club and smashes the back window to get him out. So how injured? I mean, I backed into parking meters. I backed into trees. You know, I mean, I get a dent. My car's dinged up. But it was never anything major. So it's obviously there's much more going on with him than.
And he was supposedly only going 30 miles an hour. So yeah, but you know, something else happened.
Yeah, but you don't even back out of your driveway that fast.
No, I know.
Right? I mean, you got to watch who's coming and, you know, cars coming down the street.
And he couldn't have been backing out straight if he backed into a fire hydrant.
Right.
Because the fire hydrant isn't going to be in the middle of your driveway.
Yeah. Maybe she had hit him with the golf club in the house, and he was like had a concussion from that, and he was trying to get away from her. Now let's go to Steve in Manhattan. Welcome to the Right Perspective, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
All right, guy. He probably goes to the Billy Joel driving school.
Yeah.
And he's backing out of his driveway. What do you think he lives in? In attached houses or something? He has a plush estate out there with a giant driveway.
Yeah.
It's a fishy story, and they'll try to cover it up, obviously, whatever happened to him. And one of Frank's great lines is, that's 300 pounds of food stamps over there.
Right.
And there's another phenomenon going on in this country that, you know, it's not really spread around too much, but upper middle-class white families and middle-class white families with their kids taking in, like, a black teenager.
Oh, that movie. Yeah.
Right, but it's happening around the country. It's not unusual to see this take place, but it does happen. So think about it. You give them welfare, food stamps, free rent, free health, free education, free food. Now, why not free white servants, too, right?
Right. And you know what? There was an old bastard, I think he croaked. Remember Hilly?
Yeah.
And Hilly always talked about that hateful screed native son, you know, about the black kid and, you know, the whites are trying to be nice to him and then he winds up killing them because they're really condescending and they don't understand how racism has injured him psychologically. That movie is a very, very condescending movie, and I don't think blacks like that. What I want to know is why wasn't the brother brought into a black family?
Right.
Why did it have to be a white family? Why not black folk taking him in? Or that other crap they came out with, Precious, about that brood sow?
Right. Also, what about white couples adopting black babies and Asian babies, too, right?
That thanks to the women's genocide movement that encouraged white women to have abortions, there's a paucity of white children for them, so they have to go anywhere. They bought that lies, those lies, hook, line, and sinker. And he wants planned genocide, Steve, to cull the white population, bring in Mexicraps, and change entirely the complexion politically and racially of this country.
No, you're right. Absolutely right. And they talk, death panels. I mean, they've had death panels for the last 40 years. What do you think abortion is? What do you think a partial birth abortion is when you murder all these babies? An overwhelming majority of them have been little white kids that have been murdered, and they've been replaced by, I would say, 40 million abortions, most of them white babies, replaced with 40 million illegal aliens and third worlders into the country. And I'm going to tell the people out there, the U.S. Constitution, the greatest documentary ever written, and Declaration of Independence, folks, doesn't work in a third world country.
No.
And it ain't going to work in a third world country. And your country is turning into a third world country, so it ain't going to even be working over here either. And they virtually ignore the U.S. Constitution in this country. And you see the results of it, folks. Many South Africans all over America. People don't realize, you know, you live in your little cocoon, you maybe go on vacation, you go to a good place. You know, obviously it's a place where you don't want to go where there's crime. Go to Gary, Indiana. Go to Camden, New Jersey. Go to parts of Buffalo, New York, and you'll see yourself in Somalia. You'll see yourself in South Africa.
Well, look at what happened in Minnesota. Jesse Ventura, his state. They brought in these Somalis. They brought in their families. The kids grew up as Americans. They had the best of lives. And what did they do? They joined terrorist cells.
Because you're not gonna, like I said, you're not gonna remove I don't call it culture, what their habits are and what their primal instincts are. You're not gonna remove that, no matter where you place it, no matter where you put it. You could put it inside a mansion; it's still gonna have its natural habits and its behavioral instincts will always be there. You'll never be able to remove it, and that's why the country we see now is going. You talk about a recession; we know it's the minority meltdown. Mortgage meltdown recession. We know it's damn diversity, but they don't talk about race quotas and affirmative action, which has destroyed parts of the economy, too. You put people in positions who are not qualified to do the job. What do you think is going to happen? You're going to certain white people working in that area are going to have to pick up the load, and what they can't cover is going to turn out to be a disaster. You got the case there with the with Bonnie and Clyde getting into the White House the other day, right, on the state dinner?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but that they don't tell you. The Secret Service has been infested, too, with race quotas and affirmative action. You're going to have those kind of breakdowns. I mean, that's reported. There's got to be situations that they don't report, and there's got to be situations that they probably don't even pick up that are bad. And that's the truth. That's what's taking place in this country. You're dissolving from within.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I am from John in Connecticut, and one email from Felix that he was having an affair. And I'm telling you, that may have had something to do with it. She may have cracked him in the head with a lamp or a golf club, and he may have been trying to get out of Dodge City as fast as he could.
Right, he might have gotten the Hillary treatment, right, exactly. You know, he's flying out of the driveway backwards. Well, he could have had a fight, an argument with her, and he's trying to get out of it. But I really don't. To me, I really don't. Never get caught up in that celebrity nonsense.
No.
Even with O.J. Simpson, to me, that's all a bunch of nonsense. These people are put on pedestals. People waste their time worrying about or thinking about about them. Folks, they don't give a damn about you. They don't go to your job and watch you at work. So what the hell do you care about them for? And that's the truth.
Sure. We've allowed. See, when I argue with a leftist, I never. When I argue with them, I never pay attention if they call me a racist, because that immediately implies a negative, and I have to disprove a negative, which you can't do. So therefore, that has nothing to do with it. I don't know if you saw O'Reilly, the guy with the jowls hanging down to his collar, to his chest, you know, and he had on the SPLC lawyer, and he goes, well, you know, you've done some good things. So right away, you know that he's not going to really rip into this guy. Instead of saying, who the hell are you to call someone a racist? What gives you the authority? Where did you get, show me the authority by law that you can go after people like that and ruin their lives? I said many years ago, two decades ago on Bob Grant, all they've got to do is call you a racist. You lose your job, your home, you're a pariah. All that is the worst thing that anybody could be called. And that's what they've been using for too goddamn long in this country, to cower people and destroy lives.
You're right. And the obviously, and you coined the phrase economic terrorism.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. People are petrified of losing their jobs. So you go on the air like Bill O'Reilly, like you correctly said, act like you're the James Cagney of talk radio,
yeah,
like you're the tough guy. But really, if you look at it, I don't even watch him, but no, I've seen him. Can see he always tries to, oh, well, we're really friends.
Yeah.
You know, it's nonsense out there. And that's what you get. You get a watered-down version, and it fools a lot of people, a lot of well-intended people,
right,
in the audience who really want to look at the issues and they want something done. They get confused by that, or they get tricked by that routine.
Sure.
You know.
I've renamed his book, A Bold, Fresh Piece of You-Know-What.
Right. But these guys are well-paid, and they know – where they draw the line, and they know, like, Bill O'Reilly, what is he doing? He's gallivanting around with Al Sharpton. He calls him his friend.
Imagine this.
Right? So right there, you should know that he's a phony.
Yeah.
He's an absolute phony when someone pulls a stunt like that. Sharpton is an outright racist.
Yeah, an extortionist.
Right, and he runs around the country, and he uses, like you said, just accuse someone of being a racist, and you basically can have that person lose their job and their livelihood over nothing, over some fat pig.
Yeah.
Who is the racist?
Yeah. You have Hannity, had Laura Ingraham, and you're right, she does remind me of, not Laura Ingraham, the other one, Ann Coulter, she does remind me of the girl in the schoolyard that would make fun of your haircut.
Right, yeah, that's all.
And she got an Adam's apple, Steve. Now, how does a woman have an Adam's apple?
I'll throw her a bone. Like, maybe she's really skinny, and maybe that's just the throat.
Maybe she's really something else.
Unless she's right. Maybe she's really a guy, you know.
But for her, you know, here they are, they're knocking Sharpton, and Hannity goes, they both go, well, you know, he's quite charming. And I, wait a minute, you're going down a laundry list of hateful things he said. You have him on the show. You're saying what a charming guy he is? Well, they're all who is, Steve.
Right. No, well, they nullify that. They're phonies. They've, you know, you think about the money that they make, and what you and John just basically do this as a hobby, but it's a passion. They know it's a racket.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to call up. She was on a show. I was going to call up. Ann, do I have to read your book to save America? You know, this is all nonsense. They write books. They make money. They do all these appearances. They go on the college campuses. They say, oh, they wouldn't let me out. Who cares if they don't let you on a college campus? But they've created basically a conservative racket between books, talk radio, and public appearances, either at schools or at dinner parties, whatever, and they make a lot of money doing it. But they have really, the honest truth is they're not on your side.
No.
Like I said, Ann Coulter reminds you of the girl in the schoolyard. You know.
Yeah, look at Mary Maitland. She marries that vile extraterrestrial, James Carville. Come on.
Right.
If you have any sense of conviction and principle, you're going to hook up with this thing? You're going to have this thing on top of you in a bed? I mean, really, think of it.
Right.
It's like being raped by an alien.
Right, and it goes to show you, I mean, a person from that point of view, you don't even want to look at, you're going to be around that person, you're going to live in the same house with that person. Goes to show you, it's all nonsense. Basically,
it's
all
a
nonsense.
Dog and pony show.
And they love to. Like, but that's why they do it. Like, oh, he's a charming guy. They try to show. They want to show that they're really not the R word. That's why I remember for years they were on TV. World War II. They used to talk about the Japanese American unit. I think it was the 442nd Regiment or something.
Yeah.
They used to always like to say it was the most decorated. If you notice, folks, they don't say that anymore because I'm the one who flooded talk radio saying that's a lie. You're saying that. the 101st Airborne Division, which is a division of 20,000 guys more, we include the replacements, was the most decorated unit in World War II, starting off with a presidential citation, and then here comes all the Medal of Honor winners and everything else, Purple Hearts and every other award that was given to them guys.
Yeah.
And they stopped saying that.
Well, they, you know, there's political correctness with these shows.
Right, but they all always, were
yeah, you know, if you watch any of these shows like Civil War Journal, you'd think that the North wouldn't have won the war if the blacks didn't enter.
Right.
Yeah, all of a sudden, the blacks are the big hero. The blacks freed all the Jews at the concentration camps, and we wouldn't have won World War II if they didn't come into the fight. Of course, you know, the concentration camp lie, that turned out to be a lie as well. And all of a sudden, we couldn't have won World War II without the black soldiers.
Right. That's actually slandering the white soldiers who died in all those battles by making up, either making up or believing the lie that's put out there. The same thing what they were doing the last 20 years. They were slandering the Vietnam veterans. They were saying, well, the guys today enlist. It's not like the guys in Vietnam. These guys want to be there. Wait a minute. The guys in Vietnam, some of them were World War II Korean veterans. Some of those guys enlisted. Some of them drafted. You had some tremendous heroes on those battlefields there. Read the history of Vietnam, but some of those guys did. And they're slandering them, these freaks, who the closest battle they ever came to might have been a food fight in a school cafeteria.
Yeah.
And they're saying that about Vietnam veterans. These guys enlisted. Some of them guys fought some of the most fierce battles.
And a lot re-upped.
Right, exactly. Did more than one tour there. To say that, it made me sick, but they stopped saying it because I used to call up and call them out on that and saying, out of Vietnam, there was some tremendous efforts and tremendous heroes that came out of there. And they basically stopped saying that. But that's what they are. They get onto a line. They all sing from the same song sheet. They basically become a parrots. They parrot a line that they think that sounds good.
Yeah, well, they did that. They did that in the early 90s. The 80s are over. Somebody has to pay for it. You know, decade of greed. They know how to do that. They latch on, and then people, you know, don't want to think about it, so they just repeat it. They repeat a bumper sticker, but they don't have the intelligence or the patience to even say, wait a minute, is that really true? And then they put it into movies like Susan Sarandon did a movie with James Spader called White Tower, where she works at like a White Castle, and he invites her to his rich family for dinner, and she goes, well, the 80s are over. Somebody's going to have to pay for it. And that's what they do, and that's how these lies and propaganda permeate the cultural conscious and political consciousness of the country by just saying that, and you see it, oh, I saw it on TV, so whoever, that's it. That must be true because it was on TV. That means, you know, in the movies, like in the bad remake of War of the Worlds, you know, where, and you would expect it. You know the actors that are going to say it, like Tim Robbins, occupations never work, of course, because he was referring to Iraq. And that's how they do it. And that's why movies like that don't become classics, because they're stuck in the politics of their age, and it, later on, when it's disproven, people say, what do I want to watch this idiot for? And that's what they've done.
Right. They came up with that stupid line, the peace dividend.
Right.
Right. You know, it's funny you bring up White Castles, but think about it, Frank. In all the years, did you ever hear of a food contamination or any kind of scandal with White Castles?
No.
I never did.
No.
Every other brand that was out there, you heard something along the lines, right?
That's right. And, you know, they used to have from White Castle a magazine, and they used to have it in the White Castle, and you could take it for free. It was called The House Organ, and it would be stories about different White Castles around the country, the history of White Castle, people who worked there. And people would always say, when I first came here, I had to constantly clean, and they're constantly doing that. The only people get sick from it are people who got loaded, and they eat it at 3 o'clock in the morning, but I don't blame the White Castle hamburger. I blame, you know, the fact that they're loaded and they can't hold it down with the liquor.
Right. And some of the best fights I ever saw was in White Castle.
Oh, man. For some reason, White Castle, it just draws the lowest of the low. And I don't know why, but, like, the lowlifes all seem to gravitate to White Castle.
But if you notice, a White Castle, like in the middle of the night, is like so bright.
Yeah.
You know, it's like maybe like a moth or a mosquito coming to a light. So it does attract. It does attract the
strange people too.
Right. It becomes the barroom scene in Star Wars, definitely.
Yeah. Yes, a beacon of nourishment. You know, they had a story about a guy in 1932, a college student, lived on White Castle something like 60 days. I knew a guy, he ate like one time, he ate like 65 of them. He had a contest with a guy and he ate 65. I don't want to tell you what he looked like the next day, but yeah, he was shoveling them down. Well, I got, you know, the good news for you, Steve, is that the degenerate liar and media shyster is leaving WABC. He's on a one-way ticket right now as we're speaking to Palookaville. They finally getting rid of this idiot. And you're going to see he won't be around, I hope, for the Gotti verdict. I do hope Gotti beats it just to drive him nuts. But I think he either A, may try to fake a kidnapping of his kid and play it was the mob, because he did get the $1.5 million condo on the Upper East Side. Because he said, I needed the security because the mob was going to go after me son. Or maybe have his wife kidnapped. Or maybe, you know, fake that. Or shoot up his Red Rocket Guardian Angel van and say it was Gotti. You know, he'll come up with something.
Right, because he's basically a clown. I think he's like a failed child actor or something.
He's a cartoon character now.
Right, he's a cartoon character. When he gets to Palookaville, he's going to run into Jimmy Durante.
Yeah.
And the
everybody wants to get in on the act.
Right. And I could only imagine what his office would look like. They might have to bring up the biohazard team up there or something. If I picture what his office must look like, he probably has a White Castle burger from 1940 in his desk.
Or under that beret. All right, Steve, we're going to by the way, before you go, Steve, we're going to have something very unusual going to be playing tonight, since we ran out of the old Right Perspective tapes for now. This tape we'll be playing, you're going to get a kick out of. This was, you may remember Brian Whitman, who's from Staten Island, by the way. He was on WABC for a little while there in the mid-90s, late 90s. He's got a satellite show now, I think. But he used to do a weekend show, and the first show he did at WABC was in 1997, the first night. What he did was he pulled a little trick on the audience. He pretended that he was late for the show and that Bob Brandt was sitting in for him in the meantime, and you know, until he could get through the weather and get into the studio. And he would even have a fake call that he made from his car and telling, you know, giving Bob an update, supposedly, on his progress making it into the studio. And meanwhile, he was actually at the studio imitating Bob Grant and speaking to the audience. And a lot of people couldn't really tell if it was Bob or not. And it's a lot of fun to listen to. And you'll get a kick out of this.
And his wife confessed that she caused his lacerations. Wood's wife, yeah, it's his
with
wife.
The golf club or with the left hook?
That I don't know. All right, Steve, and remember, Steve, you will always be welcome on the Right Perspective. You will always have a home on the Right Perspective, and you will not be given 30 seconds like they do to you on The Fan. Do you know there was a guy that called Glenn Beck last week? I don't know. He sounded, I know it wasn't you, but the guy sounded just like you. He claimed he was from New York, and he moved out to Indiana and bought a farm out there. And told Glenn Beck he'd be welcome to move out there.
You want to hear something funny? I've never called him. I never listened to him. To about 3 weeks ago, I put him on. All he was talking about was eating ice cream. So I dumped him off, put him back on a half hour later. He's still talking about eating globs of ice cream. And then I heard a couple of weeks ago his appendix exploded.
Yeah. Sure wasn't Michael Savage. He's always talking about eating.
Yeah,
right.
Well, he
looked. Good thing you brought that up. Beck is also another former DJ. These guys all come from AM radio. They like the blob. They seize the moment here. And
it's an incestuous industry.
Brian Whitman came to ABC around the same time Hannity did.
Yeah.
And this guy John Batchelor doesn't take phone calls because his show was pranked numerous times.
Oh.
I don't want to say by who, but I'm talking about illegal aliens and stuff. He outright stopped taking phone calls years ago because of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right, Steve, it's great to talk to you, and you always have friends here on The Right Perspective.
And Santa Claus is coming.
Oh, good.
So that means everyone should break open those saddlebags.
Yes, in memory of Johnny Lightning. They don't have to give it to him anymore. He's gone.
Well, he bought a mansion out in Staten Island with all the contributions. That's why Oscar Mayer Wiener threw him off the air.
All right, take care, Steve. Have a good weekend.
All right, Steve, take care.
And I'll see you next week. And hope you enjoy the rest of the holiday weekend. I'm going out to the train show tomorrow in Jersey.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, but it's going to be packed over there, the highway. Because I imagine everybody's running out to the mall.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's that time of year. And, yeah, I've got to get up early myself. And we won't have the show archived until Sunday morning. Just to let you know. Along with what we're going to be playing for you now, this is Brian Whitman in the studio imitating Bob Grant, pretending that he's late to the studio, his first show ever at WABC, pretending that Bob was sitting in at the studio for him until he was able to get to the studio because he was stuck in traffic, but it was actually Brian Whitman imitating Bob Grant. You'll get a kick out of this. All right, folks, thanks for staying up late with us. Don't forget the shows won't be archived until Sunday morning because I can't do it tonight. I've got to get to bed a little early and get out of the house a little early tomorrow. So we'll see you next week and enjoy just for a couple of seconds a great group from the 1980s. This song is called I Ran, A Flock of Seagulls. See you next week, folks.